David Spinopter up here with Ross Dunbar and Jonathan Harding. Jonathan, Happy New Year.
Happy New Year. Good to be back.
And the Bundesliga is back as well, the first match day after the winter break. And there was an exciting game on Sunday between Leverkusen and Hertha Berlin. And Leverkusen, man, they looked really, really good. And especially since this guy named Karim Bellarabi was back on the field. And so, Ross, let's start with you. You were actually at that game.
Yeah. So I thought you were going to introduce it rather than Karim Bellarabi was there, that I was there, and that was the reason why it was a good game. But, okay,
fair enough. Maybe that was the reason.
Maybe it was. Our colleague, unfortunately, Mr. Charles, was it 2-0 draws this weekend?
Yeah, I know.
So I think I drew the better draw of this one. Yeah, I thought Leverkusen were really, really good. This is the first time that they've beaten a so-called top four team since they beat Dortmund 2-0 earlier in the season. There just seemed to be a little bit more, I would say, confidence in the system, but, you know, they changed formation from 4-2-4 to 4-2-3-1. Bellarabi coming back was a huge difference because...
Yeah, Bellarabi is particularly... you were there. What difference did he make when he was on the game?
Well, I tweeted out before the game that the only way I could see Leverkusen breaking down the Hertha defence was if they were to play one-on-one. If they had a one-on-one player who could beat a man and just cause a little bit of chaos. And that's kind of how it looked to me, that Hertha, they marked Chicharito pretty much out of the game. He didn't have a lot of space to work around the box. And Bellarabi, especially against Plattenhardt on the right-hand side.
Yeah, Plattenhardt really
struggled. He had a tough time, and not surprising. I mean, Bellarabi is a terrific dribbler one against one, and when you have a situation where if you're on the counter-attack and you can beat a guy one-on-one, and then it just causes chaos because the other defenders, John Brooks, for example, who is the left-sided centre-half, he's forced to then make a decision. Mm-hmm. And then, consequently, the other centre-half, I can't remember who it was.
Dragovic, or it was...
For Hertha.
Lustenberger?
Yeah, Lustenberger and Pekarek, they're also then forced to make a decision. So, yeah, I think that was a key element to them winning this game, but... Calhanoglu also had a really good game. Looked really clinical in front of goal. I thought the second finish was terrific. You know, the way the ball was coming out at a quick speed to then just
great finish.
Take the touch and then bang it in. Fantastic. But I always kind of felt that Calhanoglu was one of the guys who was holding Leverkusen back a little bit, because, you know, it's okay that he scored a couple of free kicks, but he hasn't scored one in such a long time. Yeah. So when you take that element of his game away, there's not really a lot there to play with.
But playing as opposite Bellarabi, I think, helps
a lot. It makes a huge difference. And Julian Brandt was not playing so wide on the left-hand side. He was playing right in the middle.
Yeah.
So there's a bit more of a balance about the team, I think, and that's probably quite encouraging given how poor they were last year.
But isn't this the issue in a way? Because there have always been flashes of that kind of quality, but never actually been able to consistently produce that. And that goes for Leverkusen as a whole, as well as players like Calhanoglu individually, who... you know, was excellent on the weekend, but who's to say that he won't be completely anonymous now for another month? And I think that's the issue with Leverkusen. They have to go on a run. They have to make the most of it, like they did at the end of last season. And that's my only concern.
Yeah, that I think it's good that you brought up the last season, because when I watched this game, the way that they were playing reminded me of the way that they played at the end of last season. Now I'm curious. Is it just because Bellarabi was back, or did you see something else that, in particular?
It's really hard to make a judgment on one game. I mean, like I said before the game, that was the one way I felt Leverkusen could win this game, is if they were able to upset Hertha's defensive structure in some way. Because, you know, Hertha are one of the best defensive teams in the league, and it's largely because they can be so compact. There's no space. Mm-hmm. Even if you look at the way that Hertha set up, they were playing Darida as the number 10. Now Darida, okay, is a good player, but the reason he was playing that far up the pitch was because if he lost the ball, he could get back.
Well, he usually does that.
Yeah. So I mean, rather than having Solomon Kalou there, who wouldn't do that kind of
Darida's, this isn't new. Like, Darida's always played there.
I would say he's always been a number 8 or a number 6.
No, but Hertha Berlin, he's usually played as
normally they play Kalou and Ibisevic up front.
Yeah, but Ibisevic Kalou usually plays on the wing. My point is that I think that the fact that he was there and this isn't something new. I mean, this wasn't a new tactical thing. I mean, the fact that he was there and the fact that Leverkusen were still able to break it down, even though they knew it was coming, I think that was the most impressive part to me.
Mm. Well, I mean, we spoke about on the prediction podcast. Personally, I was very doubtful that Leverkusen and Schalke could make a real push for the top four. I just thought the door was kind of closed at this point. But if you look at the table now, 6 points to the top four. I mean, it's amazing how one game can maybe shift the dynamics a little bit, and especially going into a game against Atletico Madrid in the Champions League. You know, it's a huge result for them. I mean, like, I totally agree with you, though. They need to make a run of it. They can't just have one good game and then have three or four defeats, because the nature of the Bundesliga is that you can't, you know, you can't just rely on a couple of games, you know, every few months. Interesting as well that I think...
Well, I was going to say first, John, is this a top four team to you?
Yeah, it should be. I mean, you know, their ambition has always been to consistently be in the Champions League, and I think five of the last six seasons, I think they've done that. So they've put themselves in a good position financially. Their international recognition is at an all-time high. Obviously, having players like Chicharito makes a big difference, but consistently being in the Champions League is a plus for a number of reasons. But yeah, they really do have to, as you say, Russ, make a run of it and make sure that they put their foot down, because they're going to run out of games soon enough, you know. Yeah, we have just restarted the season and it is only one game, but they need to kick on. Perhaps the biggest thing is that for me on the weekend is that they look like one of the very few sides to have actually made the most of the winter break.
Yes,
like a lot of teams came out very sluggish on the weekend, as if they hadn't been away for 5 weeks or something. But Leverkusen looked like they had been away. They'd recharged. They got themselves mentally fresh, and they were ready to go again. And not very many teams had that kind of performance on the weekend.
Could you see that being at the game? Could you see that they were mentally fresh?
I don't know how to. Well, I don't know how you see someone as mentally fresh. I know, but.
Playing with the same weight in their minds that they had in the first half of the season, because a lot of those games they looked like they knew when they were beaten or they beat themselves in games, and I felt like they didn't look like that on.
I mean, fine margins as well. I mean, if Ibisevic takes his chance, it's 2-2. I mean, how would they react in that situation?
That was a great save from Bert Leno.
It was, but I think he took a guess. I think it was one of those ones that he just kind of went, right, I'm just going to pick one side, and it worked for him. Defensively, though, still a little bit of a concern. I thought Dragovic...
Dragovic got hurt.
His injury so early on, I think, disrupted the way they wanted to play. I think he went off in, like, the third minute.
Very, very early.
But I still have doubts about Wendel at left-back. I think he just vacates so much space. I know that he's an attack-minded left-back, but I think structurally...
It's Brazilian, it's in his nature.
I just think structurally it just kind of creates a lot of problems for them. But, yeah, I mean, I think... I understand. I mean, I think we actually had a very similar argument about Wolfsburg a year ago when I kind of took the viewpoint that actually the Champions League was their biggest priority because they've never been there, so they should put all their effort into that. Who cares about the league? Put all your effort into the Champions League. And I think it's actually kind of similar with Leverkusen. I think this year they really have to push on and get into the last eight, because that's been like the one huge hurdle for Leverkusen. And it's not just a football thing, it's a business thing, it's an international recognition thing. You know, for Leverkusen to be seen as a top team, they have to get beyond the last 16. Obviously, this year they have Atletico Madrid, which is going to be a really challenging game. But I think even if they can maybe just sneak into the Europa League places, which is certainly not unrealistic, and they can maybe try and get beyond Atletico, I think that would be a good season for them. I just have my doubts about the consistency for them doing it over 18 games.
Is that a good season, though?
Yeah, but that's exactly it. I mean, we've talked about Wolfsburg in the past not having good seasons when they had runs in the Champions League, but the difference there, and Ross pivotally just said it, is that Leverkusen would still qualify for Europe in some way, shape or form. Okay. Wolfsburg finishing 10th that season... And getting and playing Real Madrid.
Well, they finished eighth last season.
Completely unacceptable, because you can't drop off that much in the Bundesliga now, especially not with a squad as good as Leverkusen's or Wolfsburg. So, I think you're right. I think it's a gamble that's worth taking. They had so many years where just getting into the Champions League was the problem. Then they started having so many years where they were getting there but not getting out the group stage. Now they're getting out the group stage and they have to take the next step, and that is winning a knockout game. And if they can do that, I think it's worth sacrificing another year's worth of Champions League for a deeper Europa League run.
Now, it's interesting because Leverkusen and Atletico actually met a few years ago, and Leverkusen almost made it into the last eight, but they, I mean, at the final moments of the second game, that's when they they started to fold. But
yeah, there's still a big question mark over this squad in terms of what they can do in the Champions League. I know that's quite unfair for guys like Chicharito, who have played at Man United and Real Madrid, etc. But in a lot of the high-pressure games, they just haven't delivered, even in the group stages. I thought the game against Barcelona last year, when they went out, when they didn't qualify, was pretty embarrassing.
Yeah.
Especially against the Barcelona second-string side. There was a lot of expectation in that game, and they just didn't deliver. Players like Calhanoglu, Julian Brand, these guys have still got a lot to deliver at that level.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a perfect opportunity for them, and I agree with you. Like that's the one kind of huge barrier for Leverkusen, is getting beyond this idea that they're just a small plastic club. And if you start to get into the last eight, you know, that could really help.
But it does say a lot about recognition in modern football, how that's developed. Because actually, for Leverkusen to consistently be in the knockout rounds in any way, shape or form is a huge credit to the way that they run their club and the squad at hand. But now the expectation has gone up even more, that just being a knockout team isn't enough, and that they need to make the final eight to improve that recognition. It does say a lot about the pressure
especially the club is under. Especially given the resources as well. I mean, I don't think they are in the top four in terms of budgets.
No.
Budgets. I think they're somewhere about six or seven.
Yeah.
So to consistently be a top four team is, I think, a fantastic credit to the management there. But, yeah, like you said, I think getting into that last eight would be a huge milestone for them. But then, if they drop out, they've got to make it work in the Europa League so that you're not just having the one season where you do really well and the second season you're nowhere to be seen. If they can get into the last eight this year, you might be able to keep Chicharito, you might be able to keep Julian Brandt, and then in the Europa League you could have a really good shot at it.
I was going to say, because that's the conundrum, isn't it? If you take the gamble that we've just said and you go into the Europa League next season having beaten Atletico in the Champions League this season, is that worth it, considering the fact that Julian Brandt, I just feel like he's going to go in the summer for 60. Right, so someone's going to come in and
you
be
think
like,
"He's going to be this summer." You think
this summer someone's going to offer something like 45, 50, something silly, and he's going to go. And Leverkusen have every right to cash in. It'll be a similar situation to Sané. But that being said, I think Brandt's been far better than Sané has or was at Schalke. And then you have an interesting situation. You've got 50, 60 million, but you're not in the Champions League. So then it gets harder to bring in replacements for a player like Julian Brandt.
Mm-hmm.
So actually, then is the gamble worth it? You know, there's obviously two sides to every coin.
Of course. But the one huge benefit of Leverkusen, is they have a real kind of structure in place. They're already planning for what will happen. Kai Havertz was on the bench.
Yeah.
Really impressed by him, by the way.
Talent,
he's a quality player. And if you look at Leverkusen under-19s, obviously they don't have a second team. Obviously probably our listeners don't know that. A lot of German teams have a second reserve team who play in the lower leagues.
We talked about it a little bit.
It's no longer law, that's why, because they changed it.
So now they play. So basically what they do is they're promoting your 17-year-olds into your 19s, your 15s into your 17s, so that when they get to the under-19s, they are ready. I mean, you look at Benjamin Henrichs, for example, it's a good example of that. Played up front in the under-19 squad, but he was ready to come in and play when called upon.
Well, I think this gamble, I mean, if you think about it, if they go for it in the Champions League, I honestly, with the teams that are up there in the top of the Bundesliga right now, it's definitely no guarantee that you're going to be even back in the Europa League. So to me, you're going, now we also have to keep in mind that the Champions League could be only two games for them. So yeah, giving your all for the Champions League is, what, two extra games? I mean, maybe in the grand scheme of things, it's irrelevant. But what I think is that, I think the biggest thing is that they have to establish, like you guys said earlier, a consistent run of form in the Bundesliga in order to make your way back up the table. And then that's how you keep your players at the
club. But as much as it is just two games, I think Roz's point about the fact that two games in the final eight of the Champions League, the recognition that a club like Leverkusen will get for reaching that stage and the prestige of drawing whoever they draw, because at that stage, anybody in that draw
you could make the counter-argument that it's, six games until the final?
Yeah, absolutely.
I know. I get totally understand what you're saying, but on the other side, six games is not a lot, and especially in knockout football, you don't have to be gung-ho, you don't have to be the best team, all you have to do is just get through.
And it would also be, we've talked about this a lot, but it's also a telling period for Roger Schmidt.
Yes.
Because as much as it's a telling period for players like Calhanoglu or Brandt, to show that consistency, he has to do the same.
Yeah.
In terms of his decisions, in terms of his selections.
I mean, you said it. I mean, they came out of the winter break more prepared than I think any other club.
Or it looks that way.
It looks that way. And basically, that will change a lot of people's opinions on Roger Schmidt after, I mean, what was the one of the worst first halves that they've ever had in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, I think stylistically, in terms of how teams play, I think the manager, his personality, his characteristics always represents that style of football. Simeone is really kind of jumping around in a touchline.
Yeah, of course.
And Atletico want to play that way. And I think Schmidt is kind of the same. He's very animated. Like, he's always in the referee's faces. Mm-hmm. He's always shouting at the fourth official. It doesn't really set a good example on the touchline. Mm-hmm. And
Stefan's style of coach, though. He likes the other coaches.
But, I mean, there's been talk already about friction in the dressing room. They've got rid of their athletic coach because the players didn't like him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure about his man management skills. So when it comes to the big games, both in the Bundesliga and in the Champions League,
yeah,
I think there's a lot of focus on him. He has to set an example. Mm-hmm. If he's calm, if he's measured, you know, and very kind of deliberate in his approach, then I think that will rub off on the players.
But it's interesting because he's not the only one in the Bundesliga who's in that position. I think Thomas Tuchel is in a very similar position.
Mm-hmm.
He's not measured, or at least not as much as we'd like him to be, or we originally thought he was. There's obvious tension in the way that he approaches games because he's such an intense character, and he obviously demands a great deal from his players. And that it's interesting to see two managers going for a similar spot in the table, facing a critical stage in their career, in my opinion.
Well, we'll go more onto Dortmund in a second. Before we move on, I just wanted to ask, Hertha Berlin, to me, did not look like the top four team. I mean, it is, and to me, it seems like they are a very defensive team, but yesterday they couldn't play the way that they probably wanted to play. And if they don't play the way that they wanted to play, it seems like they can't get going at all. Did you feel the same way watching it live?
It's a hard one. It's a hard one to really make a judgment after one game. It's very tempting to say, oh, Hertha's season is turning upside down like it did last year when they had a complete capitulation. But
yes, it's one game, of course.
But I thought they were really hard done by the penalty decision. I have one real gripe about modern football is when referees give penalties for handballs. When someone kicks the ball off someone's hand.
Yeah.
I hate that. And that would drive me insane.
Especially from such a close distance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I cannot stand that. And That changed the game, I think, to go for 2-0 up. You know, second goal is always the most important.
It's not always a given that Leverkusen would score such penalties, though.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's true. Yeah, very true. And then if Ibisevic scores, it's 2-2, so we could have been talking about a completely different game. It's a hard one to make a judgment on one game, but I think not having Kalou was a big loss.
Yeah.
Although that being, yeah, they
were quality players. He's a quality player.
Sure, but you know, given the record of most of the Bundesliga stars in the African Cup of Nations so far, I wouldn't be surprised if he was back on the plane at the end of us recording this podcast because you know most of the top players have gone there, played the group stage, and have come home. So
Stocker's okay. He was the replacement on the kind of left side forward position. He's good, technically good player, a little bit lightweight. Maybe doesn't make the best decisions in the last third, but technically a good footballer, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But I wouldn't be worried. I wouldn't be worried right now about Hertha. No. I mean, I think you've got to give it four or five games before you can see whether.
Yeah, and even then, finishing in the top seven,
exactly.
Eight is fine.
Yeah, exactly.
It's fine.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No problem.
It's great. Even I don't want to say fine for it. It'd be a brilliant achievement for them.
Well, the great thing for them is that they don't have to. They got knocked out. They were smart and got knocked out of the Europa League as soon as possible.
Before it even started.
As soon as possible, so they don't have to worry about that. So let's go on. Jonathan touched on it a little bit. Let's go on to Dortmund because they did not have the most marquee game of the weekend against Werder Bremen. But they were playing without, of course, Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang, but they were still struggling, nonetheless, against Werder Bremen. But of course, the biggest talking point, I think, that coming out of that game was that André Schürrle played up top and didn't look terrible.
No, but, you know, the thing about André Schürrle is, and there's lots of things I could say, he has a lot of shots, but not very many of them are good.
Yeah.
And I think that's the best way to put it. I remember the Leipzig game, you know, where he breaks through and he smashes it over the bar. And there are just situations where you think, you know, considering the fee, considering that you're working with your favourite manager, the manager that you have the best connection with in your career, considering the players around you, he should be doing a lot better than he is. I mean, it's the story of his career, really. But yeah. I don't think it's a solution.
No.
I think it's an issue that Tuchel has at the moment in terms of finding the right players for the right position sometimes. I still think he's figuring out how to use Guerrero to the best effect. And it's kind of, I'm not saying it's worrying, but, you know, you hear that he feels that they haven't had enough time working together in January, that he didn't get enough time to really train the players. And you're sort of thinking, well, hold on a minute. You've had, what, four odd weeks with the team. You've been to Spain. You've had enough time, close contact, working with them. What are you... You can't work miracles in that time, but you should surely be able to get the team looking sharper than they did in Bremen, because quite honestly that was one of the worst performances of the season for them, and that comes after an extended break.
And that was with also Marco Reus in the team and also with Socrates, two players that maybe that had injuries in the winter break, and maybe they couldn't afford to not have them basically take a game off.
There's certainly an element, I think, sometimes of you know, you can't not have some of these players playing even if they're not 100%. I mean, they got the win at the end of the day, and the other side of the argument is that you have to win ugly and all of that. But there are big question marks in this team still. You know, Matthias Ginter, how long do we need to talk about him before we start saying, is he even good enough?
Yes.
Because, like, he's been a promising defender for too long in my eyes now, mm-hmm. and there have been a number of games where I've been quite worried about his performance, his individual performance, where, as much as I think he's a talented defender, is Dortmund a step too high for him?
Mm-hmm.
Because he didn't look good against Bremen. Bremen don't have a sharp attack. Yes, Gnabry's good, but Pizarro is slow.
So Gnabry was taken off in the first half for tactical reasons, so that's not even a factor.
And Finn Bartels is good, but he's also not the type of player that Matthias Ginter should be being schooled by, mm-hmm. if Dortmund is the level that he's at. So, concerns defensively. And this whole Isak thing, look, he's obviously talented, but he's played less than 30 games. Mm-hmm. You've signed him for a fair fee.
By the way, this is the 17-year-old, the Swedish 17-year-old that Dortmund just signed. He's supposed to be the next Zlatan Ibrahimovic, although that comparison has been put into question.
And that's
well.
Exactly the issue. You know, it's wrong to make these comparisons on two levels. One, because there is no repeating a player like Zlatan Ibrahimovic, and two, because it's just lazy, because it's unfair to put that pressure on a 17-year-old that, as we were saying the other day, has played fewer than 30 games. You know, yeah, he might have had shown flashes of brilliance, and he might be the most exciting striker in Europe, says all headlines everywhere. But you're signing him, now that Ramos is gone, as your number two striking option, because Schürrle isn't really an option, and Aubameyang is back.
Well, that's the point, because
that's insane.
You watched Schürrle play at the weekend, and then your solution a few days later is to buy a 17-year-old?
You have to buy someone. Ross and I were talking about this last night, and it's because he didn't buy anyone in the summer, is what we were saying. You know, and you put yourself in a position where you have to get someone now, because he got rid of Ramos, and you can't leave it all on Aubameyang. He's already delivering, you know, everything that Dortmund have in attack. You can't basically ask him to do it for the rest of the season on his own. And I don't mind that they're buying players that will eventually deliver, but they do have to have some eye on the now and not just be worrying about the future, because Dortmund are under intense pressure to finish in the top three, in my opinion, because they have to qualify automatically. Tuchel's under pressure. The club needs the Champions League consistently. That squad demands the Champions League consistently, otherwise those players are just going to go elsewhere. Mm-hmm. And all of this comes to a performance against Bremen where perhaps there's still an argument of, yes, but they're still young and inexperienced and they've still got a long way to go. And that's fine, but then don't, on the other hand, put them under an insane amount of pressure and expectation. It doesn't work both ways. You can't say that Julian Weigl was the best defensive midfielder or the most promising defensive midfielder in Europe and then say, well, he had a rubbish game or whatever, you know, because it doesn't work, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Is Tuchel under pressure, Ross?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't think he is. I think he's in a bit of a difficult position, because I think John made the point that Dortmund have been signing for the future and not for the now. And there's only so much that the manager can do. However, I was very confused by his decision to leave Götze and Dembele on the bench. Now, I understand that Dembele is still young, physically still developing. He's getting kicked all over the pitch pretty much every game. But it's the first game of the new year, so what's the reason for not playing him? He's, in terms of an attacking sense, probably is Dortmund. In fact, I think he is Dortmund's most dangerous player, especially when you play him in the inside kind of channel.
Definitely.
I think he's so dangerous there. Like that, that had the potential to be like a tactical masterstroke playing him in that position, because not only if you play a player wide, it's much easier to keep an eye on him. But if you put him in the middle in that inside channel, you're really then committing players. You're committing the defensive midfield,
especially against Werder's defense.
Yeah, and you're getting into the really important positions, which are kind of central of the box. Now, again, I understand. I said maybe that was the reason for him being left out. I don't know, but I just find that very confusing. I understand if they've got a lot of games, you know, Benfica, and then maybe another league game or something like that, and you'd rest him for a game. But I don't understand why you'd leave him out. And you look at guys like Kagawa and Castro, and even Marco Reus. They really haven't been that consistent, and I find that very confusing. Mauro Götze as well. Mauro Götze, if you go by his Instagram stories and his Snapchat, he's working his balls off to get fit.
Really is.
Right?
He really is
putting in the effort. Right, he's putting in all the extra sessions, even when he's on holiday, and he's not playing. I just find that very confusing.
And it's interesting because his lack of, you know, inclusion has actually sparked this nationwide debate at the moment about whether they've had a prolonged sense of patience with Mauro Götze, Dortmund, because of the history and everything, and whether they've been too patient, whereas other clubs would have said, right, okay, look, he's just not good enough.
But he was playing well, though.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing, he was playing well.
And I think, as much as this sounds silly, this is a player that's been damaged severely by the move to Bayern.
Yeah. But therefore
requires extremely careful treatment.
Yep.
And you got to play him. Like, you don't have to play him just even if he's playing badly.
But
that's different.
Let me go back to Tuchel for a second, because now, like you said, if he doesn't make the Champions League after finishing second, this is his second year. But he lost his three players. But now I'm starting to see Dortmund is not for. I mean, Gladbach went down really quick. With even though they went to this meteoric rise with a good looking tactical coach, that's exactly what Dortmund did last year too. They went on a meteoric rise with a new coach, and the next season, of course, Gladbach not even close, fired their coach, and of course Andre Schubert was only an interim manager at the time. So it was probably maybe easier to get rid of him, even though they signed him to a contract extension. That was stupid. But my point is, I mean, Tuchel is... I don't see much of a difference between Tuchel and Andre Schubert, because we were praising at the beginning of the season Andre Schubert's tactical, tactical nuances.
I think the difference is that Tuchel has spent very big in the summer to replace...
Well, Dortmund spent very big.
The spine, yeah, okay, but...
And Dortmund was the one who got rid of the players. But that's exactly what Gladbach did, too.
Absolutely, but Tuchel... I mean, obviously...
Yeah,
you can't,
but not to the same extent.
Not to the same extent, but they still sold their best midfielder and did not bring in a good replacement.
If you look at Tuchel's interview with Rafael Hornstein on ESPN...
It's quite revealing.
Really, really good.
Quite revealing,
I think you can
talked about that interview three times.
He's really pissed off. And I think Hummels and Gundogan. Well, Gundogan was definitely going to happen. Everyone knew that. Hummels was a kind of half. Mkhitaryan was out of nowhere. So when you lose all those players, I just think I don't think you can put a lot of blame on the manager.
No.
And at the end of the day, it's about the end result. I understand right now they're not playing particularly well, and if they do finish outside of the top four or five, then you can maybe start asking questions about Tuchel. But let's say they finish third. You know, they're 1 point off third place.
Yeah.
I think that's a good season, and I mean, Champions League, they might have something to offer. If they get through against Benfica, which I think they're expected to, went to the last eight, they might be.
I think the team is set up to do well in the knockout competition.
I think so, yeah. I think so too.
And I think that's perhaps an issue for Tuchel going forward, that they're not good over the longer haul in the league. And that, you know, consistently producing these performances away at Werder Bremen, and you know, that's a problem for the Dortmund team at the moment. But you're right; I actually fancied them to go to the semis.
That's
quite deep, based on the draw.
That's actually a really interesting point, because I did a little thing on Fox Asia about the Bundesliga this year being like the lowest scoring it's ever been for 20 odd years. I think a lot of that is down to the fact that the Bundesliga has just become such a defensive first league. It's all about pressing, it's all about what you do without the ball.
Yeah.
Whereas the Champions League, I think, is about having you know, strong collective base, and then you let your individual players win your games.
And that's
Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, Griezmann, whatever. And I think Dortmund have those players. Marco Reus, because he's not getting kicked around in the Bundesliga, he's able to play his own game. Dembele is going to be a huge threat in that game. So I think, I agree with you, I think they could do really, really
well. So Tuchel's basically calling card could come in the Champions League.
I mean, look, it could be the absolute making of him. It's the making of any manager that wins the tournament. I'm not saying that they will win it. Obviously, a lot will be based on the draw after Benfica, but they could go to the final if they get the draw right, because Ross's point is spot on. You actually have teams that come out and attack in the Champions League, and there's a lot of... there's a lot of intent, whereas you only have to look at the way that Darmstadt set up against Gladbach to see how difficult it is for teams like Dortmund, who rely on individual talent in those situations, for them to even find a way through. You know, Dembele isn't going to look like the Dembele that we expect against Darmstadt, because he can't. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that the game goes. But away at Benfica, away against Real Madrid, you will see him be a YouTube footballer, basically, you know, and that's what will make the difference. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of reason for Dortmund fans to be very excited about the Champions League, and
well, I mean, but I mean, I'm trying to still, I mean, because you have your gripe now with Thomas Tuchel.
Yeah, I do. I think he's in contrast to Ross. I think he's under a bit of pressure, and a large amount of that pressure comes from the pressure that he puts on himself. I think that he is frustrated that he lost his spine in the summer. I think that the loss, as you say, of Gundogan was completely, you know, that was coming. Hummels,
we've gone through the transfers, and what I'm trying to get...
Yeah, but let me get there. Yeah. Mkhitaryan, I think, was the one that hurt him the most in terms of how the team was playing. Mm-hmm. And I think Tuchel is trying to do the best that he can after that, because not many managers in the modern game lose that kind of spine in one summer.
Yes.
So in that context, he's doing a great job. Plus, it's never easy for a manager to have such an excellent first season and then to follow it up after that, because short of winning the title, there's not much more he could have done, you know, than what he's doing now. He needs to win games and play and have his team play more convincingly. There's no doubt about that. But I do think he's under pressure. I think because of the fact that he's such an intense manager, as much as I have a lot of time for him and I respect him and I think he's, you know, I love the work that he's done, it will be very telling where Dortmund finish in the Bundesliga this season. And you know, we were saying earlier about Champions League versus Bundesliga. Finishing in the semi-finals of the Champions League for Dortmund and not qualifying for the Champions League is not really good enough.
Okay, I was just about to ask that, because we just had this discussion with Bayer Leverkusen. So what do you think, Russ? Semi-finals or even quarter-finals or semi-finals? I mean, they can make the semifinals, but maybe quarterfinals is more realistic. If they make the quarterfinals and finish outside of the Champions League, which Stefan predicted last week, is that a good season for Dortmund?
No, I don't think so. I tip them not to finish in the top four. I think they really should be. And I think if they don't, then you're right to ask questions of Tuchel. But to be honest, I don't think Tuchel will be there beyond the third season. I think that'll be it, so...
I don't think he'll be... I think this summer will be a hugely intriguing summer at Borussia Dortmund. In the Bundesliga generally, but particularly depending on what happens this season.
All right. The reason why I'm bringing this up too, because, I mean, this is... we were talking about Thomas Tuchel being, like, nuancing German football last year. You know? And now, this summer, what do you think he's going to stay at Dortmund this summer? If you had to say now.
No, I...
Do you think he's going to stay at Dortmund this summer, Russ?
Yes.
Okay, so yes and no. I'm still in the air, so I'm not going to give an answer. So you guys can let us know on social media. So we're doing pretty good right now, but since not much else really interesting happened, I mean, we got some little things that happened during the match day, but why don't we save that for the shot from the Tribuna? So, John, what is your what do you want to shout from the Tribuna this week?
Well, Steph sort of touched on it on his piece on the weekend about how these sides that were doing well in the first half of the season look like they're going to fade away, and I actually think that there were a couple of results this weekend that could prove very telling for the second half of the season. Both, I know you want to talk about Wolfsburg later on, and I'll let you do that, but the fact that both Wolfsburg and Schalke won 1-0 in largely drab games, as much as Wolfsburg may have had some individual quality on show, I feel like the and I look at Schalke's game, you know, and there was a great headline that said, as you know, the classic headline is, every game needs a goal. Well, this goal needed a game, and it's very true that Burgstaller's winner right at the death was what Schalke desperately needed. Christian Heidel had some very interesting comments to say after the game about the fact that Schalke, you know, still have things that they need to improve off the pitch. And he's actually doing a lot of talking for my liking at the moment. But anyway, these results are the kind of results that at the end of the season make a big difference.
Mm-hmm.
And although they didn't play very well, it's huge for two clubs that are trying to emulate Dortmund and finish in the top four,
mm-hmm.
to get those results and get the season started, or restarted, the way that they wanted. Leverkusen, Schalke, Wolfsburg, all won on the weekend,
mm-hmm.
and Dortmund. All of those clubs are under pressure to go on a run of form now, mm-hmm. and I think it will be very interesting to see
which ones do,
how they look when we have this same conversation in 4 weeks' time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry, I didn't mean to put words in
your mouth. No, not at all. All
right, Ross, what do you want to shout from the Tribune this week?
I don't really have anything interesting to say, to be honest. One thing that did catch my eye, actually, was Pulisic's new contract at Dortmund. I think that's a really big statement of intent, because it's not just with Pulisic, it's not just the athlete, it's the fact that he's American. And everyone knows what that means nowadays, selling shirts, all that kind of thing.
Particularly good for their tour coming up to the US.
Yeah, exactly. But I think it was a real statement of intent for Dortmund to make sure that they tied him down for a long time. Don't get me wrong, I thought
he signed a contract, by the way, until 2020. So
I thought he was disappointing against Bremen. But I think he's a great talent, and you've got to give him time. So that's the only thing really I have to add. I think it's a big statement for Dortmund to be able to hold on to players like that, whereas in the past, maybe I know that they lost three players, but they didn't lose three players because they wanted to sell. They lost three players because
their contracts were about to run out.
They aren't losing players right now because players don't want to be there.
Mm-hmm.
No, I think it's a great move by the club, and it's good for him, it's good for the team and the league.
Yeah, it's good for the US men's national team.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So long as
Bruce Arena's all right that he doesn't play in the MLS.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? So John touched on it. The thing I want to shout from the Tribune this week was we were talking about Leverkusen looking like a promising team again. Wolfsburg, even though they were playing Hamburg, they looked, even without Julian Draxler on the field, they looked much better than I have seen them in a very, very long time. And part of the reason, of course, people will talk about Paul-Georges Entep. First step Entep,
Quick step. Trademark. Entep. I'm taking that.
Okay, so we have a new trademark here on the Tribuna. But obviously he was great, and I think everybody was talking about how great he was. But to me, it wasn't just that he was great. It's also that Yunus Mali too played really, really well, and the fact that is not only a shift on the field, but that could be a huge shift off the field as well. Because it seems like the Julian Draxler thing was a huge distraction. But now that both of them are, now that they found two players that could very viably replace him on their own, but also replace them together, those are the kinds of signings that Wolfsburg probably wish that they could make all the time. You know, if they could give those two players the 36 million euros 2 years ago rather than Julian Draxler, I think they would have taken that deal any day of the week because of just the way that those two players played together. And I think that Mario Gomez looked better because of it. I think that when Daniel Didavi comes back, I think that he will also get on with those players really well. So it's a great sign for Dortmund and for Wolfsburg, because also they're looking for a coach.
For Wolfsburg, not for Dortmund.
For Wolfsburg, yeah. It's not a great sign for Dortmund.
Dreaming of Mario Gomez and yellow and black.
It's a great sign for Wolfsburg because they're also looking for a coach. And, I mean, they were trying to replace Fellerm and Ishmael. It seemed like they were trying to do that in December. And if they have a team that looks more attractive, then it's going to tempt someone like Andre Villas-Boas to go there instead of taking the big money deal in China, rather than, yeah, so...
I mean, I can't see anybody taking the job now. I think Ishmael will have it...
But not right now.
Until the end of the season.
Exactly.
And then you have to make the decision based on where they finish. I mean, I agree that the signings look very good. I mean, it's one game. We've said that about all the teams that we've assessed today, but... I think what's effective and what's interesting about the fact that they didn't have it in the first place is that Intep is basically an out-and-out winger who beats people and crosses the ball, right? That's music to Mario Gomez's ears because that's exactly what he hasn't had, really. I mean, Daniel Caligiuri has dropped off the face of the earth and he's been not even anywhere near the player that he was with De Bruyne, but even after De Bruyne left. So,
well, it's also, isn't it the reason why they got... Blaszczykowski too, because I felt like that was like half the reason why they took a chance on him.
Blaszczykowski isn't the same winger anymore. He's not.
No, exactly. Like, and I think they figured that out.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that says a lot about Wolfsburg if they did indeed buy Blaszczykowski to be a take-on one-on-one winger, because that's a ludicrous idea. I think he's more of an important figure in the dressing room, which is what they need. But if Intep gives Gomez that service for the rest of the second half of the season, Gomez will be scoring 15 goals. And that's just because it can be very simple. The goal is a perfect example of that. Football can be very simple in those situations. Ball goes through, Intep beats the defender, and then he has the intelligence to run into the box at a diagonal angle, then pull the ball back on the floor low, square to Gomez, who basically just does what he does in training all the time. He doesn't even have to think about that. And if you do that repeatedly, then even Mario Gomez will score lots of goals. So.
We have a little bit of time left. Does anybody want to give their opinion on how awesome Robert Lewandowski's goal was?
Oh, yeah, well, it does need some acknowledgement. Ross, you think this is the perfect goal, and I'm thinking I agree with you, other than the fact that the finish isn't clean. If it was clean...
Oh, come on,
The argument is that even... the argument is if the finish is clean, the ball doesn't go in because he has to hit it that way to get it to go off the post and go away. But I'm just saying, it's perfect if that volley goes in off the laces in the top corner. I mean, look, I'm complaining and being very picky here. It's an absolutely amazing goal.
Jonathan Hater Harding?
No.
Yeah. Hater's going to hate.
Come on. The control, for me, we talked about this.
We're talking about perfection.
Yeah, the control is what... The control on the inside dip of the collarbone in the middle of a jump whilst holding off a defender is what gets me the most. Not just, obviously, we talked about balance, coming down, control, and then finishing, but the initial touch is just remarkable.
I'm speechless.
Still speechless.
Yeah, I'm still speechless. That's phenomenal. Phenomenal. I mean...
The goal happened on Friday and you're still speechless.
Exactly, yeah.
I think that says it all.
We had a kind of chat on Twitter about Lewandowski and whether he's better than Cristiano Ronaldo. I think so. It's a good way to end it.
Absolutely. I think in terms of there's so many facets to the debate, but you know,
goal of the season?
Ooh,
I can't remember the other goal, so yes.
Yeah, I was going to say it's hard to remember that when you've seen that. It's hard to remember.
Mm-hmm.
Although Naby Keita's was pretty good.
Yeah, okay.
Rocket. Was it against Freiburg?
I think so.
One was amazing.
Yeah.
Hard to. Yeah. Anyway, options.
So if you haven't seen that, there has to be 1,000 vines out there. Yeah. Well, no vines.
No vines.
Vines are gone. We're living a new age. Thousands of videos on Twitter about it.
Oh, God, how old does this podcast sound? You mentioned vines. God, yeah.
Yes, it moves quickly in the Thunderdome. Tell us what you think about that Lewandowski goal, and be sure to reach out to us at the Tribune Podcast on Twitter. Jonathan is at JohnBlog66, 2 G's and 2 6's. Ross Dunbar is at Ross Dunbar 93.
Two S's.
And I'm at Davis_VanOpdorp. New two R's, but not next to each other. that tactics to each other. Also be sure to subscribe on iTunes and give us a rating too if you have time to do that. But if you want to give us a 1-star, then you guys probably have something better to do with your lives.
You suck, man. You suck.
Give us some ratings because that's how we improve as a podcast. And so we hope to hear from you next week. See ya.